is
I'm afraid you're mistaken.
You're listening to the Teach Me How podcast, a classic World of Darkness role-playing workshop with Nate and Bob. Brought to you by 25 years of Vampire the Masquerade and UtilityMuffinLabs.com. Thanks, everybody, for listening. This is an older one of our Patreon-exclusive podcasts, and it's a couple of years old. I think it was originally recorded in 2018, so sound quality might be a little iffy, but hopefully the content is still there, and hopefully it's enjoyable for regular listeners of our podcast. If you like this podcast, if you're looking to support us and maybe get some more material like this, go to patreon.com/25 years of Vampire the Masquerade. You can back us there. Helps us, helps to keep our show running and support us. And without further ado, let's get into the episode. Welcome to another episode of the Teach Me podcast. My name is Nathan.
And I'm Bob.
And it's not like you didn't know that. You're a patron. You're a backer. You're a listener. So I had an idea, Bob, and it's an idea that no one asked for.
Oh?
Well, that's not necessarily true. I didn't put up a thing. I didn't put up a vote to have anybody vote on it. I just kind of like, I felt like this was something we probably should have talked about a long time ago. And it kind of shocks me that we didn't. So for a lot of people, and tell me if you agree here, but for a lot of people, they play this game in a tabletop scenario, right? And there's sort of like a natural inclination towards getting up and sort of acting out what you're doing, right? And I think a lot of people want to know, like, as a storyteller, how do I turn my game into a LARP? Or how do I just run a LARP?
I got to start this with telling you how I played a game that decided we were going to be one storyteller, five players, and we're going to LARP it.
Mm-hmm.
Right, a little diceless role-playing, right?
Right.
So, got the scenario, we just set it up, right? Five of us,
right.
One ST. And I'm not ST'ing this time, but I'm just because there's no way I would do this, right? That's me, though. It's me, though. Because to me, live action is we agree, we have the blue book or the green book, we're out there, we're getting it done. Or whatever right. color it is now, that's what we do. But we're in this guy's house, so we do Dark Ages. And I'm like, how am I going to be this Dark Ages character? I mean, I'm in his house, gorgeous home, right? Massive upstairs, downstairs. We're in the living room, which isn't the living room. Because the living room was more like a museum.
Right.
Right, had plastic gun stuff and whatever. You don't go there. But we're where the guests play.
Right.
And where the guests play is like any person's three-bedroom apartment. Right? Just that
right.
huge.
Right.
So we're in front of this massive TV. We're all sitting there. And he's like, okay, we're going to do Dark Ages. And everybody get up and kind of go to that room is going to be the entranceway for court. And I'm going to play every individual NPC. And I got to tell you, it was so slow. It was so clunky.
Right, right.
It was so what the hell. And I'm sitting there the entire time and I can't get into character. Like, I'm like the worst. I think I was 20 at the time. And I'm sitting there making faces when he's over with somebody else and they're trying to be serious. Because my mind's wondering.
Right.
It keeps wondering. I got no focus. I don't know what's going on. And I thought about it, right? Because afterwards, we go to Denny's. And this guy's sitting there and he's like, huh. I kind of feel this diceless role play sucks. I mean, like, it says in the book, you get the LARP rules for it, but I just didn't get that five people could live act it, and how does that work out?
Right.
And the one thing we came up with is that when it's talking about the LARP rules of the table, what are the advantages, right? There's no dice. The sheets can be kept in your pocket, but that hold on to that thought, right, if you're in a living room. What else, right?
Right.
And so that's what I told them. I was like, when you compare it to tabletop, what are you getting out of your diceless role play, your LARP, versus your tabletop? And that's why I want to make sure that we're talking about the two same things. Are we
right.
talking about that diceless role play, quote unquote LARP, or we talk about a real deal LARP?
Well, so I felt like when I kind of like thought of this, so basically how it all breaks down is one night I'm at work. This is about a week ago. I'm sitting in, just kind of chatting the Discord. And one of our listeners just like kind of springs this question like, hey, I've got eight players and they want to turn it into a LARP. How do I do that? And I was like, you know, that can't be a unique scenario. So kind of what how I wanted to attack this was very much from like the ground up. Like, I've never ran a LARP before. How do I do that? But also, you know, make that distinction. A couple of distinctions. One, you know, throwing together a LARP with your tabletop group is a little bit different than deciding you're going to start a LARP and invite a bunch of people to it. And it's also incredibly different than like your typical org LARP. Very, very different creatures, you know, cut of the same cloth, but very different in how you roll them out and how you play them. Now, to sort of bounce at your story that you just told, like, I've had a similar experience, right? And fundamentally, all you need is one, I say you decide on a rule set, period. You have to have a cohesive set of rules for everyone to agree upon on how they're going to play them.
Without exception.
Yeah.
I mean, here's the thing. People are going to tell you house rules work. I always say this, house rules work in a house.
Right.
If everybody's immediately there, if the entire game and ST and staff is right there at all times, we can use house rules then.
Right.
But if they're nowhere around and it's player on player, house rules are up to abuse. It's that simple. There's no book they're in. There's no rule to back them up. We've been to many games. All of it ends up the same. It's somebody manipulated a non-lawyer worded rule that now is to their advantage. It's a bad situation.
Right.
So simply put, I know you're the same way. We're staunch about it. If it's this book, it's that book and no other.
Right. Right. And that's exactly the truth. I would say the very first thing that you need to decide, if you say, I'm going to take on the responsibility of running a LARP, the first thing you need to do is go, okay, we're going to use this book or this set of rules, and these are the rules that we're going to use. So that way everyone is in agreement. Now, you could say, I'm the storyteller, and anytime anybody does an action, I'm going to take them off to the side, and I'm going to roll some dice, or I'm going to throw some chops. Okay, great. That's fine. That's fine for that scenario. As an example, about 2 years ago, we went to a LARP. We've talked about it on a couple of podcasts, but I went with Rachel, and it was a one-night game, and it took place essentially in two rooms. And, you know, it was heavy on role play. Stay in character, stay in character, stay in character. And that was fine. It wasn't like beaten into us, but that's just like how it broke down. And so I think everyone's natural inclination was to try to communicate and debate their character's position as opposed to jump to powers. So powers were used very sparingly. So the storyteller only ever had to resolve power related issues maybe three times in the whole night. So it was easy for him to go, come on over here, let me roll out some dice real quick and figure out how this works, and then I'll go in as a storyteller and I'll describe what happens.
But is this where you guys are playing the jacked up juggernauts? That's who you're playing with?
So we were playing.
I apologize for that phrasing, but that's why you were the modern men playing with the X-Men, is what seemed to be point value.
I would say that that's more just an issue of the creator of the characters and their understanding of the power level. So yeah, basically, I would say. Because number one, this was a convention that wasn't a vampire. It was a
okay.
It was a,
it's not what I'm talking about.
Yeah. No.
Okay.
No.
So convention's different, right?
Right.
That's a different scenario. I thought this was talking about the one you guys reg go to.
No.
We got it. Okay.
So the one that we go to normally is Obi-Wan, and Obi-Wan is an org game, and Obi-Wan is like, here's your character. Let the chips fall where they may. You better know your powers. It's a very competitive LARP. The one we go to is pretty non-competitive. It's definitely role play. But anyways, the convention that we went to, it was people that had never played Vampire before. And so instead of explaining, here's this big ass green book, now read this, and now let's spend 2 hours trying to figure it out, the storyteller very much took the position of, you let me know what you want to do, and I'll work out the rest. And that was easy to do because he only had, 10 people, like 10, 12 people, and it took place all in one room, you know?
Right.
And it was one game session. That's the other thing too, right? So you can do sort of rules light LARPing and throw an event and have everyone sort of role play their characters and let that play out. But you have to understand sustainability, right? Are you going to do this game just once and that's it? Or are you going to have these folks build something out of what they're playing?
Well, let's double down here. Let's focus a bit. And, yeah. and on let's stick to what it seems like you were asked, from tabletop to LARP, 8 people.
Right.
Right. That's simplest. And what do we know we need? We need, like you said, rule book agreed upon across the board. Step right. one. And on this end, your choice is between using V20 rules, right? But using a rock, paper, scissors system, or however you want to adjudicate right. again, agree upon it, the system. Once you have that, or you could do that, or you could do the, what is it? The, what's the one we haven't done that's the most popular one? Mind's Eye Theater.
Yeah, it's Mind's Eye Theater, the newer one by Binight Studios. That's like right. the most current LARP rules.
And that's a version. And then there's still right. Laws of the Night is still going around for that other flips. There's like a couple sets you want to look at and see what you want to get into. But again, make sure everybody knows. And the second thing that's equally critical, while you have 8 people, you need to decide what the story is going to be and what the social vampiric structure is going to be. And do not make the mistake of deciding as a newer storyteller that you're going to play all the important roles and they're going right. to be that clique running around. Instead, divvy up the power, right? Because you're all powerful at all times. That doesn't matter.
Right.
So get that in your head. But you need to make sure that, okay, if it's going to be these 8, reward your 8. Right. You may not think it's important. Reward loyalty. If they're willing to stick with you and do this LARP experience and that's what they want to do and that's what you're going to go to, that's what you need to do. Now, if it's not going to be a different game and however you have it set up, that's fine. But we're talking from, you know, one night Nate goes, hey, guys, let's make this a LARP. Why do it this way? And we're going from that neutral standpoint.
Right.
Because if you make a player prince, you have a sheriff and what have you and Primogen and all that, or archbishop and bishops or whatever you choose to do. What happens for you as a storyteller is your job becomes compartmentally easier. They have more right. to do. And so as more people get added, there's more going on.
Right. So let's talk a little bit about the differences, like the fundamental differences that you'd find in a LARP session versus a tabletop setting. And you'd said something very important where you mentioned, like, you know, as a storyteller, you don't want to be playing every single character. Right. And how is that different than tabletop? Because like in tabletop, if I'm the storyteller, like I just go back and forth, I have to play all the NPCs. How is that different in LARP?
Well, you can't be everywhere. Right. Right. And in a LARP, it's you're an observer as a storyteller in a LARP. I can't tell you. I use the term referee quite a bit internally.
Right.
Yeah, Bob, you're the head ST. You mean the ref? Because what I want to do don't matter. It doesn't ever right. matter. You know, because if I could tell, I could bring everybody. I've been to every type. And one right. of the ones that are the most trying to my patience is when everyone comes together at the beginning of game. All right, everyone, time stop. That means game's on hold. And we have to listen to whatever the guy in charge is saying. I'm going to describe this deep, involving plot with narratives from several different NPCs, letters received, and a court setting, and what goes on. You're just the audience, and I'm going to take up an hour and a half of the 4 hours time you guys all get to meet this week. And I'm going to tell you, I'm going to literally feature dump every idea that's grand and in my head. And then game on
right.
and let it go. But the entire freaking narrative only ever benefits like 3 people out of 40. Right. And it's like, well, I get those are your 3 buddies that you worked on with this weekend at the Denny's and wherever else you met. But what about everybody else who right. could give a shit about the plot?
Right.
You know.
Well, and that's the thing too. Like one of the key elements that I was trying to impart upon the person who had asked about this was the way that you storytell in a tabletop game is incredibly different than the way you storytell in a LARP. And in a tabletop setting, most people know I basically have your undivided attention as a player. You sit in front of me and I can just, you know, paint a picture with my words at all times. A LARP is very much setting based, right? So tonight we're at this place and here's why we're here. Role play your character, right? So you get way less opportunity to describe all that stuff. And the truth is, you don't know as a storyteller as much as what's going on as you do in a tabletop game. And what do I mean by that? Bob said referee, right?
Yep.
So, you know, when game starts, your job kind of as the storyteller is basically just to walk around and observe things. Now, one of the we went to a night in question in November, and I didn't interact with a storyteller the entire night, right? And that's not a criticism, that's praise. There was no opportunity for me to ever talk to a storyteller or jump out of character. When I got there, I was in game. I was my character, right? I was the biker bad guy. And I had my motivations as a player because I had my character, right? So I have my gang to interact with. I've got other people that are dealing drugs at the club that I got to interact with. And then I have this weird vampire crazy shit that's going on in the background that I don't know anything about. And I have to go through all of those processes. What do I need a storyteller for?
Now that's true for an experienced player.
Right.
Now let's say you're inexperienced or you're shy. You know, that's what that referee's there for. You're there to spot that person who's, it's not all clicking together for him. Right. And so you need to go and help them out. Quite often as a storyteller, I'd be the guy, you know, there's usually 2 to 3 sometime. Well, at 100 plus an average weekend, there'd be a scene of like 10 people, 8 taking turns talking, some words exchanged, whatever's going on, heated discussion, whatever. I'd walk over to the people all on the outside and I'd be like, oh, hey, what are you guys doing? Oh, man, we're listening to these Primogen go at it. I don't know who dropped what ball, but something went south and I'm just here to support my guy. Let me see your sheet for a second. Like, yeah, sure. You note this flaw? Yeah. Oh, man, right. You can't keep your mouth shut. Your guy's impatient. You're terrible at keeping secrets. This guy's talking loud. Hey, as an idea, what do you think about you going forward just to the back of your guy? Maybe start mentioning stuff that he wouldn't necessarily mention.
Right.
Like what a shitbag the guy is that's talking to him right now because he can't hide his own bodies when he feeds. You know, that favor you did for him? Bring it up when it shouldn't be brought up. See what happens. And then the player's like, oh, man, I can do that. Like, oh, yeah, I'll stick around. We'll see what else you can do. And then they walk up, you know, because I'm not saying this loud, you know, and then they walk up into that scene and change the whole dynamic of that encounter.
Right.
But you just made that person's night.
And that's really key as well is, you know, when you start a LARP, for a lot of people, it's going to be very difficult for them to portray those roles because it's very different sitting at a table and going, my character does this, my character does that. That's just a conversation like between me and Bob, right? Bob says, hey, my character goes over there and opens that door. And as Nate, you know, the storyteller, I go, okay, such and such character goes over and opens that door. In LARP, you go open that door, right? You are portraying the character in a way that completely removes that sort of tabletop boundary. And I think that's a big struggle for a lot of players. It's something that I've seen a lot as a storyteller and I've seen a lot as in other games where I'll be interacting with someone and the player will break character and go, my character does this. And I'm like, you're not LARPing. Like, you know, and I don't mean that to be like dickish, but it's true. Like you just do it. Just walk over there and tell Cassandra the Lasombra that, you know, she needs to get out of your town. Don't tell me the narrator. Don't narrate to me that you're doing it. Right.
And be prepared. I mean, you're absolutely right. But be prepared for that player who's taking a drink or chewing on some food, who like actual food, right? Who pauses and goes, okay, my character walks over and, you know, opens that. Yeah, it's cool. I'm going to do that. You got to allow that out of game element. You know, if somebody's taking in sustenance or enjoying a meal or a drink, you got to allow for it. Because the key to any game is not take yourself so seriously that you remove the fun.
Right.
Two things that happen when someone ingests food or drink. Their body is releasing chemicals that tell them to be happy. That's what happens, right? Sustenance is good, and they want to use it. Let it happen. Want that donut, buddy? Have two. You're like, oh, I caught you in the middle of that delicious sugary drink. It's okay. You're about to have a burst of energy. I'll round robin. We'll touch base, okay? We'll parking lot it for now and walk away. Come back to that guy later on when they're flying on wires because they can't, you know. They got that excess of energy.
I think that kind of brings us to what I feel is like the second most important thing about a LARP, and that is location, And what I mean by that is just sort of deciding where you're going to run the game. Now, we've played dozens and dozens and dozens of games at colleges. That's up and down the road, right? There's tons of colleges, but and that can be especially challenging when you're like in an open venue.
Yep.
To decide like where are we, what are the boundaries of the game? And a piece of advice, I would say always designate a location somewhere, wherever you're having your game, as a place that is out of character. And why you do that, why I would suggest doing that, and a lot of people don't do it, is so that way you don't have the problem where half of the people are in game and half of the people are out of game chatting and, you know, eating, drinking, doing all of those things, because it can be very difficult for people to maintain being in character if you have a sort of disjointed mood, right? You have a bunch of people over here chatting about the Cubs game and
you're talking about distractions,
right?
The site you pick has to have the least amount of distractions toward what you're there to do.
Right.
What's a way to solve that? Have a time when it's past people eating.
Right.
Right. Your game, tell everybody they can meet up at about 6. No big deal. But game doesn't start till 7:38.
Right.
Right. If you could do that. And then what you do is everybody should have ate. Right. For your hardcore, they're not going to eat after 6. They got a temple to maintain.
Right.
That's the freaking rule. That's the hard rule. Right. No eating after 6.
Well,
got to take care of your glutes. All right. So anyway, if not, normal people though, right, they're going to come here and, you know, the less hardcore are going to come and have their diet in mind, and they're going to take care of that before they get to game. Some people though are flying in after work.
Right.
And so you got to give them all that time to take care of it. But at 7:38, you can look out. I've extended game and people, man, Bob Sartorius are starting a late game. No, I'm not. I'm not going to start game when 6 of you chipped in for a pizza that got here 20 minutes ago. Yeah. And I'm not going to start in the middle of you all drinking drinks and eating food. It's not going to happen. So I'll give you a little time. You'll right. trickle over. It's no big deal. And then that's it. And then we'll get going, because I want to eliminate distractions. So time right. is one. And then the second one, like Nate already said, location. And by location, if you're doing it at a park, do it opposite of the Oktoberfest.
Right.
Right. Just because that's been your area all summer long or all winter long or wherever it is, they now put up a pretzel stand and some nachos and what have you. When people eat, they socialize. It's in our nature to do so. So if you're going to put it anywhere, even if it's near the drink and chips room.
Right.
At a college, we noticed that too. It'll interrupt scenes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think that now I think a savvy storyteller with time and money and effort can find creative ways to integrate snacking into his game, because like Bob said, snacking definitely creates a social venue, right? Like people get more social when they've got a drink and a cupcake, right? But you know, if you have some sort of red beverage or mugs that people can drink out of, right? You do all these little creative things, you can integrate the snacking into your game and it doesn't sort of break it doesn't break the reality of what you're trying to portray.
In so fact, it adds to it. We had several right. Halloween games where we threw in a little extra cash to make sure that people were drinking out of these goblets right. and they're all on the side looking fancy and they have it. And then suddenly they're running out to their car to get their Ren Faire outfit for their right. character to wear, you know, and come over here and all this fun stuff. It helps immersion as well.
Absolutely. And I think that that's something that a storyteller needs to make a decision on as well, right? We talk about like the rules and the location, and that's really so you know you have a game. But then, you know, as a storyteller, you need to kind of decide like what am I going to do? Because you have a different responsibility. You actually won't have to spend as much time. Well, this is relative because you can, but you shouldn't have to spend as much time working on plot devices and hammering all that home when you can spend time going, this is the location. This is the why we're all together. And then this is how I'm going to keep everyone engaged, right?
Okay.
How am I going to keep people in character?
This is beautiful what he said. We're talking about doing a setting as a plot device. Something the book won't tell you, right? Your setting as a plot device means if I'm going to have a game in Mexico City, but we're not Sabat. I'm going to say it again. In Mexico City, but we're not Sabat. I've already hooked you.
Right.
I've already hooked you. What the hell could we possibly be that's in Mexico City that's not about dealing with all that? Guess what? You could be Archons. This could be a game where we're sending you. You were literally sent by your sires to pick up something specific. And we're assuming this crazy storyteller is going to tell us all about that in a minute, or we're going to get it on a printout or whatever it is. But the setting itself, they're already thinking of things they could play that would circumvent the Sabbat, or maybe they're infiltrators to the Sabbat, or whatever the case is. That's setting as a plot. And once you've done that, all you're doing at that point, and this is cheating for you, but I cheat all the time when it comes to that. You let the player give you their completed character idea and concept, and you pilfer that sumbitch for every possible plot hook that you can think of to add to the game and environment, because the game is all about them. So this is not a sprint, right? This is a marathon. And so the more you know about that character, the more you know how their play style, and the more they forget about the sheet they gave you, but you retain some key bits, a little note-taking goes a long way here, the more your plots seem amazing, magical, and in-depth. And it's because they are. You've threaded them successfully together.
And I think you'll come to realize, too, that as your player base grows and diminishes, so too will the way you storytell change. And what I mean by that is, I gave an example earlier of the LARP, the one shot that I went to, and there was a very small group of people, right? So that storyteller had a beginning, middle, and end. And he wrote that on every single player's sheet. You know, here's what your goals are. Here's what you want to do. Here's what you want to accomplish by the end of the night. Boom. Simple, easy to follow. I get it, right? But when you're running something long term, now you're kind of, you know, you're hoping that you get more players. You're hoping that you get more people, because more people are going to want to sit in those positions. In an ideal world, you'll have 20 or 30 people and everyone will fill a position. And now suddenly you have a city that's running on its own. You have everyone who they're motivated by, you know, the competition against other players. They're motivated by the responsibility of their position. They're motivated by power. So eventually you're going to go, okay, everyone's submitting downtimes to me, and I'm going, this is what happens based on all of this input. I'm sort of like making diagrams, right? And then just playing referee as everyone sort of plays their roles, right? So this is a very challenging form of storytelling, because you're constantly having to adapt what you're doing, but it can be very rewarding as well. The key though is finding how to keep those players engaged and keep them interested and wanting to come to the game. Because there's nothing worse than a LARP just sort of like everyone standing around like an awkward school dance and no one wanting to dance. You know what I mean? Right.
Yep. Yep. And you're going to – that's going to happen anyway.
Yeah.
Be prepared for it. Because here's the other unspoken element. We're getting rid of the intangibles first, because those are the often hardest to get. And I'm going to state this because I know this isn't going to be 3 hours. However, a lot of the tangibles are already in the book, right? Beginning of any LARP book you grab, they're in the 20th book for how to role play LARP style versus tabletop. And we're going to go over it briefly, but we're going to stick to intangibles. But off of what Nate just said, it sparks something. The most important thing. These are adults that are playing this game with you. Accordingly, there are emotional landmines that you cannot avoid, but you are responsible for how you handle them. Now, what I mean by that is an ST, you're neutral. I don't care what's going on. You're neutral in all things between game start, after pre and to post. You are on the clock, right? I would say, I argue that you're on the clock the moment you get to the site. That doesn't end, right? But you need to be there to be the voice of reason. So you need to be on the lookout on some things. Someone comes to game crying, and they're going to sit down, you're the first to go over there. You're not the last. I don't care what your job was like that day. I don't care what you just came from. I don't care if you were crying in the car before you walked the game. If you're having real life issues, cancel your game. It is better that game is skipped that week and you handle your shit than you show up to game. However, you're the ST. So there are a bunch of people who agreed to come to your game once a week, once a month, whatever it is. So that night, they arranged to be there on time. You will not get many forgiveness. There's no forgiveness for more than one or two time cancels, because you get a reputation for being someone who keeps canceling game. You will have no players. So I'll warn you of that there. However, yep. When it comes to players, there's no such rule about them not coming to game crying. It doesn't matter what you wanted it to be.
It's very true.
This is a social environment, and your troop develop friendships that you will not develop as an ST. I wish I had these intimate. There was 100 plus people, more than that, that showed up to game that I wish I had heartfelt relationships with each and every one of them. I couldn't because I was neutral. It both fucked me and it helped me. But it made it possible for, because you will not get along with everybody. That's what I'm stalling around. You cannot get along with everybody unless you are neutral. Your personal feelings aside, you're going to be the ST. So when you go up to crying guy or crying girl and you're like, hey, what's going on? And they start crying, first things first. It's not that I want you to ignore what they're telling you. I want you to ignore the reasons that they're crying. I want you to just care about that they're crying. That's all you got to do. For any human being who's having a bad day, just care that they're having a bad day.
Right.
It takes you maybe 15 minutes. Let them know that. Let them get a ground under them. And then ask them one question. Say, hey, I appreciate you sharing that with me. I know you got a lot going on. Can you play tonight? I know you showed up, but is there somebody I can get for you? Is there some friends here I can go wrangle up to see if we're here? What can I do for you right now? Need some water? Just care. You right. either turn that person's day around and they'll want to play, or that player will realize, nah, this is real bad.
Right.
I'm just here to talk to so-and-so and I'm going to leave. Now, why you do that, let me do the opposite because I've experienced this. When you ignore that person, you tell a bunch of players that aren't going to come tell you that you're the asshole, that you don't care about what goes on in their life. Now, you may think, oh, man, I got this responsibility as an ST. I'm running game. Now I got to care about what people think. Yeah.
Yeah. It turns out that being a competent storyteller is a lot of hard work. And there's a very specific reason why most people don't have a storyteller to go to. I mean, that's the truth of it, right? Like, you know, Bob, how often do you get to be a player in a game?
I don't.
Right. I get to be a player when Bob runs. Bob gets to be a player when I run. that's basically what it is. Like, but that's because this game is hard. I liken LARPing, especially LARP storytelling, to like running a business. It's very much running a business you're not going to get paid for. And what I mean by that is you have to take pride in what you present. You have to consider every player because your players are customers. That's the truth. Your players are customers. They're buying your story. They're buying your game. Even if there's no money being exchanged, and rarely is there ever any money being exchanged, those are customers that you want to keep happy, right? But you want to keep happy like running a business. Sometimes you just have to say no. Sometimes you just have to say, unfortunately, our policies don't permit this, right? But also, if a customer came into your store crying, you'd want to know, like, whoa, what's going on? How can I help? What's the situation?
Did we do something? Is there a situation that happened here I need to address? That's why, you know? But you don't want to quiz them, so obvious. Right. But you absolutely are listening for that situation. Right. And why? What's one of my favorite rumors lately? You don't want to have somebody that your company researched 10 years ago was supporting the Nazi party working for you and have that found out that night. And that's why the Jewish girl game is now crying.
Right.
You don't want that situation. So your job is to walk up and talk and be personable to help them realize, hey, different time period, different thing, not true, trolling, whatever the situation is, you do have to go handle it. And you want to do it quickly. Right.
I mean, the truth is, like with the human element, that is just as an important aspect as any other part of this game. The fundamentally speaking, everyone that you interact with, you should be friends with, you know, in the context of a game. But that's not possible, right? You're not going to be friends with everybody, but you do have an obligation, if you open the doors to your game, to be cordial to people and to treat them with respect. You know, it's simple as that. I'm here's a funny little thing I was watching that was kind of affirming for me yesterday. I'm watching Hot Ones, and you know, it's like the hot chicken leg, you know, whatever chicken wing show, and Shaq was on, and Shaq talked about like every person you interact with you should respect, because you don't know what's going on in their lives. You don't know, you know, how hard they have it. You only know you. You know your perspective. And I agree with that. I feel like it should be a no-brainer. But the truth is, you should, as a storyteller, always look at the perspective of that other person and try to move forward interacting with them with respect, period.
Now, let's talk about protecting your neck. And I don't mean like sticky situation. I mean, you have a threshold.
Right.
Everyone does. And there are people who will come to take advantage of that at a LARP. There are folks who I'm not even suspicious of. I know for a fact. Came to LARPs to start drama, as I call it. They're just there to get, you know them, you know, however it is. If it's in-game, ignore it. In-game, game handles game. You don't have to worry about it.
Right.
If it's out of game, if it's disruptive, unfortunately, you got to deal with it. And I say unfortunately because you got to go over and talk to them. Now, if you don't have the advantage of being a proto-mutant, lost Scandinavian African giant like myself, then I suppose you got to make do with just being polite. But
no, you could do the Nate solution, which is shave a mohawk into your head and just look menacing.
Yes, two forms. If you lack that ability, and you could do what we do anyway, regardless of the physicality of it, is just walking over and talking to that person, but you tell them exactly what of their behavior is causing issue. Don't beat around the bush. Walk over, pull them aside, say, hey, Mr. Z, can I talk to you for a second? Yeah, sure, what's going on? Because naturally, they're going to be oh so caring that you're talking to them. Often, like a kid you catch with the hand in the cookie jar, they'll behave that way. You'll know because their eyes get huge.
Yeah.
Right? When you ask them to come talk to you. And you'll be like, yeah. So I want you to know that I appreciate you coming out. I appreciate you participating in game. But I also notice that you have a habit of dating people at game. And then when you break up with them, completely trying to make them miserable at game. Are you aware of how disruptive that is? And watch them go, they'll either two ways to go, but, oh, man, I didn't realize I was doing that. Oh, yeah, I probably shouldn't be doing that. Or you'll get the, man, what's it to you? Son, your fuck business, what I do with Bob. Both got to go.
Right.
It doesn't matter out of their response either. I know what you're thinking. Bob, that's crazy. There's no way that person can stay? No. Because the moment you address their behavior that night, you need them to leave sight. That night. I'm not saying for all time. They need time to think about what the behavior is that's being disruptive. Because once you describe to them their behavior, you got to describe to them how it impacts everybody else's enjoyment as a troop. Right? Then, once that's done, and you tell them, hey, you're out of game the rest of the night, I can't control where you go. But please try not to disrupt what's going on. Can you do that for me? You either get, hey, bug you. Blah, blah, blah. Either way, they never do that. They never go back to be a pain in the ass over there because you talk to them, you call them out. They weren't aware of it. They're in some type of way. Human beings are cool like that. Usually when they get called out for being jerks, they don't like it. And so they got to go back and realize what they did and do some introspecting. You got a final piece. You have to then add post. Handle all the game, give all the high fives, get out all the good stuff that you want to, and keep this for the end, right? Because people who got to go immediately don't deserve to have to listen to the end part that I'm about to say, but they do deserve all the good rewards and fluffs and everything else that you would give for post. At the end of post, you then tell everybody, hey, just so you know, I specifically had to talk to this person about a situation, and don't tell them the situation, don't tell them why you called them out. But simply mention that and said, you may have seen that they weren't here tonight. I hope they decide they are going to come back after our discussion. But if you couldn't interact with them or whatever feel good fluff that says they're NPC'd for the moment, please come see me what you would have pulled them in for. I'll make sure they get it, or I'll make sure the NPC is now aware of that.
It sounds very much like corporate management.
It has to be.
No, I only make that joke because, it's going to sound weird, but LARPing has informed my ability to function on a corporate level. And likewise, functioning in a corporate level in turn informed my LARPing ability. Now, you know, some of the stuff we're talking about right now is probably people are going to be like, oh, I don't ever want to LARP. This is like, oh, this is too much. But here's the truth. These things can happen. And they can happen in real life. They can happen in every facet of your adult life, but they are rare. but these are things that you, as a storyteller, you need to be prepared for, because you are entering into a different realm.
And you're welcome. Nobody fucking told me and Nate about this stuff. Nobody. I got a green book thrown at me. Read, and the best of luck to you, pal. Right. I've been lied to, manipulated, fist fights started. I've had, and funny as it is, yes, towards me, someone would try to punch me, and I'd have to push them in a bush or hold them down and let them realize size matters or whatever, and be like, calm down, give them a hug. I still care. We're human beings. Weird shit. No one prepared me. God, if I just knew all that,
right,
it would have helped me set up some rules. Now, you're smarter. I'm 40. Whatever age you're starting this at, you're in an era where people are ultra sensitive and ultra caring about every little thing that comes under the rainbow. That's awesome. I don't think there's ever been a better time to LARP or storytell, because no one's going to let shit slide.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, I've mentioned this before, and I don't know if it's necessarily emblematic of the entire organization or just the region that I'm in, but man, the LARP that I go to, it's once every 2 months. It's basically in character from the start to the finish, and there is literally zero drama. Now, I know there are other games in other places in the same organization where that's not the case, but the truth of the matter is the people that you run this game with will create the tempo with which this game will run. So if you start off with a lot of very difficult people, very emotionally unstable people, you're probably going to have a very dramatic, chaotic game.
And I want to correct one thing. It's not the players, it's the storyteller.
Well,
no, it's the truth. It's no, just,
I don't disagree with you.
it's just like it is, like Nate said, in a corporate environment, you're going to want to say it's the employee. No, it's not. It's their leadership.
Right.
And a storyteller is a leadership position. And in leadership, you know that how you are currently handling things and your rule calls and how you see stuff, they're responding to how that is. Now, it's either you care and it's a very caring group and they start realizing it and they're playing game and they're having fun, or you handle it however you handle it. But if you are having constant drama, it first starts with you. Now, once you've taken care of you, I'm not saying that it's only you. What I'm saying is that you can only take care of you.
Right.
So if you are okay and you start going around and doing assessments, start saying, no, it's players 1 in 10, not all 30, handle 1 in 10.
Right. Well, and this comes down to something that I've also mentioned before in like certain educational tabletop podcasts that we've ran. I think it is incredibly important for you as a storyteller to do a little introspection and go, why do I want to do this? Why do I want to run a game? Why do I want to storytell? Am I doing this for ego and power and the ability to sort of be the god of everyone that arrives? Or do I genuinely want to give a good time? Do I want to give good fun? Right? If you're going, I'm like playing vampire and I want to play the baddest ass character and I always want to win, so I'll just like run my own game and be a storyteller. Stop. Don't. Just don't, because you're not ready for that. What you're doing is you're going to just sort of suck in dozens of people into your weird rotation and gravity, and just it's going to suck. And if you are in that position and you're listening to this, you're probably unfortunately not aware of it, but I'm hoping that at some point people do stop and go, yeah, I mean, I'm doing this because I want to genuinely give fun.
Friends, don't let friends become shitty LARP divas. It's that simple. You pull them down. Don't let LARP divas ruin it for you.
Right.
And that's especially when it's a damn game.
Right.
The to bring it back, right? So what we were discussing before we went on this huge tangent was we were looking at the structure, makeup, what you got to do, right? Decide on the rules, right? It's decide on location. Then it's going to be deciding setting as a plot, which is a grand idea if you're going to have a lot of people plan for that. If you're not going to, then it follows plot standard. Then the other point I would push towards too is logistics. That's the biggest point of a LARP that you have to worry about. You don't have a bunch of time devoted to downtimes. You can't. Right. So, and if you've never heard of downtimes blue booking, we've certainly have talked about it.
Right.
But it comes from LARP and tabletop, right? Tabletop, they call it blue booking. In LARP, it's downtimes. Now, what that ultimately means is that you need a point for where players can submit to you somehow, some way, a plan that their character is doing the other 6 days of the week or right. the other days of the month when they're not here.
I think more so with LARP than tabletop, because typically your tabletop games, like, you could end in the middle of a session and pick up next game session right where you left off. With a LARP, like, the door's closed. Like, that's the end of the day. Like, typically in all circumstances, when you pick up again, an appropriate amount of time will have passed every time. Well, your players are going to go, well, what'd my character do? I was just in limbo. I wasn't able to accomplish anything. Downtimes, actions outside of the norm of game. And that's where I think it kind of like reverses in a sense. You know, your LARP is typically going to be one session from start to finish. It's real time. With a tabletop game, you can jump around and do flashbacks and do, you know, forward here and we're at, you know, so downtimes and establishing that is very important for LARP. It's basically what I'm trying to say.
It's that simple. The downtimes is the base in the system we use. Is we're going to use influence as well. Influence in LARP is everything. It is everything. I break it down, I believe, into 13 different categories for old school laws of the night, if I remember that correct. And that's literally would be a podcast in itself to get into it. But
right.
they have a book called Dark Epics, which is the down and dirty, fastest way to know it, learn it, love it, and understand it. It's just right. quick and to the point.
Very systematic.
I believe By Night Studios still does a version of it. I don't know how they couldn't. And I've heard, well, this is just from what I've heard. They do have a varied form of influences, whatnot, that can be, works for the system. And so if you're there, you know what that is. Check that out. Make sure you understand it. Because as a storyteller, this is how your players affect scenes. And what I mean by that is influence affects affects the interactions of the world.
Right.
So if someone killed 15 people in a club and that's the Primogen so-and-so's domain, and that Primogen wants to clean it up, but they also want to figure out who did it. Well, first step's cleaning it up, Jack. Got to protect that masquerade. Next right. step is finding out who it did, and you're going to have to team up with the sheriff to get at that person or find out who did it. And that's how it goes. So that generates scene, right? They have stuff to do outside of the setting as a plot feature that's going on. And so in this, that just created its own plot. That's their own like mini side scene or goal for the next session when they start game up. So that helps you as an ST, you know, okay, they got that in their hat. I can move on to the next players. And what we've been saying, most critical, is that if you think just approving players and attaching them to plot it, you're done, you don't have to work with them anymore, that's a lie.
Right.
We've given you false information if that's the case. Because, Nate, how many hours do you think we've invested in 1 week's time of figuring out what 60 to 80 people are going to have happen to them session to session?
I would say anywhere from 20 to 40 hours, depending on the size of your LARP, you're probably going to be dedicating in addition to just game session. And that sounds like, wow, that's like a very big investment. Yeah, it is. It is. Yeah. I mean, look, I've been to games where your average storyteller does zero work until the night before the game session and slapdashes a bunch of shit onto a sheet, or sometimes doesn't even update your sheet, doesn't even give you that much effort. And, you know, you can tell the storyteller is just sort of there because he doesn't have anything else to do on Friday and really wants a bunch of his friends to come and hang out. And then I've been to games where people, like, when we ran game weekly, and we ran game weekly, and we did it with the same amount of effort that people do when they run a game monthly. Like, we were, every week we would go and sit down at a restaurant and we'd order a plate of nachos, or we'd, you know, do something where we can sit there and, you know, have a couple of beers or a couple cups of coffee and just go through, like, this is what's happening in the city. This is what happened this week. You know, we're talking 4 or 5 hours, whatever. And then we're also doing all kinds of communication throughout the week. You know, I got this in the email. I got that.
What this comes down to is that before enlightenment, it's chopping wood and fetching water. And after enlightenment, it's chopping wood and fetching water. Right? There's no way around it. I don't care what you choose to do. If you're going to be good at something, if you're going to be good at anything, it's chopping wood and fetching water. That's going to be in your thing, regardless, before and after achieving your goal.
Right.
You know,
it's like anything else. The more work and effort you put in, the better your game is going to be. But here's the thing. You have to be able to make that time, right? When, you know, before we were doing this podcast, very simple. I can recite to you what my days were like. Go to work, come home and play video games and complain. That's what I did. Zero work. And you know, Bob can attest to that. Like that's what our life was. Whatever. That's fine. If that's the life you want to live, if you want to do something more, if you want to write a story, if you want to storytell a game, if you want to do anything other than just exist, you have to put in effort and work. And guess what? When you decide tomorrow you're going to run that LARP, I got news for you. It's going to suck. It's going to suck, period. It's not going to be great. But the fact remains, if you try hard and you continue to do it, you will learn and you will refine. And it's like anything else. There's people that run tabletop games that have done it for years that have never made any changes to what they're doing, and their games are always the same, they're not any good.
Let me throw a little baby powder in the raw bottom here of what Nate's saying, a little bit. And what that is that it's going to suck because of the nerves.
Right.
That's the worst part about running a LARP, the nerves. You feel that all eyes are on you. You right. feel that you're going to mess up. And what that is public speaking. That's all that is. Ultimately, this is a game. If anything you say is correct and if anything you say goes, nobody will ever know where you mess up.
Right.
They won't know. They won't. And you're one of the greats when they could never figure it out. Right. Because they're all having a good time. That's the goal. It, just know right. that if everybody's laughing, smiling, and having a good time, I don't care if the Bruja somebody played suddenly gained 5 levels of celerity because they were able to dodge a bullet because you forgot they couldn't. Or that was a special power. Or whatever the situation. Who cares? Right. right? I will tell you right now, you have permission to do that in forgetfulness. Because nobody cares when it's a genuine mistake. They'll let it go. Great for the scene. You move on. Right?
Right.
If it's a habit, you got a problem. Remember, same book of rules. However, accidents happen. Be mindful, be adult about it, move on. For the player element, how you conduct yourself as an ST laughs, you're able to laugh at yourself. You're able to help adjudicate issues that may happen calmly. You're able to be hands-on and contemplative of the plots and the things people are trying to do, and you're patient. You're able to tell a good yarn. Right? Hallmark of a storyteller is telling a story. And when you do play those NPCs or you are describing those scenes, because players will pull you aside for side scenes to get stuff done, if they feel cool, if they feel like what they're doing is awesome, botch or not, then you're doing your job. And so those nerves
how important is that? Like, truth be told, how important is that? And I think we can kind of like wrap up here once we're done with this. But like, it is really important that players don't feel embarrassed about what they're doing and they just feel cool.
Yep.
Like that. It's the simplest trick. It's the easiest thing. It's not that they want everything to be easy. It's not that they don't want things to go without challenge, but remember, every person that comes to your game is the hero of their own story. They don't know that they're supporting cast. They think that they're the hero. And that's the truth with life. We're all somebody's supporting cast and we're all the hero of our own story. And that should transition very easily into gaming.
Except for Bob. Bob appreciates the praise and the worship that you give nightly. And he'll continue giving blessings as long as you praise Bob through Utility Muffin Lab. Just saying.
But yeah, what I'm saying is, you know, make your players feel cool, you know, like nobody wants to be the bumbling, fumbling buffoon unless that's the character that they made. You know, there are some Inspector Clouseaus, respect it, yeah. But you know, I think really fundamentally what it comes down to is respect and understanding as a storyteller, this is not meant to intimidate you. These are the worst case scenarios, period, because you need to know that it's not all going to be, you know, gumdrops and lollipops and fuck off calling me, whoever you are.
That's important. You know, fuck off calling me, whoever you are, all the time in a LARP is a problem.
Right, right. Yeah. Mute your phones, people. That's all I'm saying. No. Yeah. So, of course, this is not an all-encompassing, you know, cipher on how to be a proper LARP storyteller. You're going to have to do a lot of, like, growing pains on your own. But I think if you decide to do it and you work hard at it, and you really dedicate yourself to running a LARP game, it can be the most rewarding experience as a storyteller.
I honestly think we're podcasting because of it.
Right.
Like, seriously, right. Legit. It's that length of time of doing the LARP stuff and doing the reading and appreciating the material. And we were always on the side of servant leadership. We were always helping people and leading through that helping. That made us go, man, everybody should know how this should be laid out. And, you know, we think they have a right to hear it. And more importantly, we just want to talk in front of mics.
Right. No. And so my advice to you, if you're listening to this, go start a LARP. Do it. If for no other reason than so Bob and I can play.
that's the real reason.
Yeah. It is a lot of fun. And it can be as basic or as advanced as you want it to be. And look, you know, there's a lot of people that talk about like competition in LARP and like it can be toxic. It can be anything. It can be great. It can be tons of fun. Yes. But life is about competition. Life is also about working together and collaborating. So don't think you have to be one thing and that's all you can ever be. Sometimes you're going to have a chop fest. And just, sometimes you're going to have none.
And just ask yourself a question. Do you think Britney Spears cares that she's toxic? I mean, she made a song to tell you she's toxic. She's still making it work. So I'm just saying, you know, toxic's what you make it, and it can be corrected. Don't fear anything because it has a negativity to it. You haven't done it yet. You could be the positive change that environment's waiting for.
Right. If you have a standard and you stick by it, you know, people of a like mind will gather with you. You know, like breeds like. So, yeah, hopefully this gives you some insight. Hopefully this was entertaining. If nothing else, you just maybe enjoyed hearing us talk.
This is part two.
And today is part two of our talk on the LARP, the running a LARP game and doing LARPing and all that fun stuff. And before we get into like a little bit more of the information about running a LARP, I wanted to mention a question that was posed to us by one of our Patreon backers, Michael Moore. He asks, he says, Bob said something to the effect, sorry, let me rewind that so I can sound like I'm not a moron. Bob said something to the effect of STs are not players, but STs and players are on the same level. Can you expand on that? It seems that the time and effort to manage the whole LARP slash game must be greater than that which is required to manage a character for simple arithmetic reasons. So I feel like there is more to your statement. Do you mind expanding on that statement at all, Bob, about the whole LARP player, LARP storyteller level thing?
I can't. Let me get my soapbox here.
Yep, absolutely. Got it firm under my feet.
Okay. So a player and storyteller are different in title, right, in terms of what they do, but then they're also not. Because I'm referring to points in terms of power, right? There's a misconception from an ego perspective that if I'm a storyteller, I'm the all-encompassing, most important person at game. It's not true. Right. It's the players who are the most important aspect of the game. But also, from the player's perspective, the storyteller is the most important because without the ST, without each other, there is nothing.
Right.
That is the point.
You, and, as a storyteller, just to expand off of what you're saying, you as a storyteller... You, it's important for you first and foremost, and this is the one piece of advice. Maybe I gave it in the other podcast, but as a storyteller, it's not about your ego, right? A lot of the biggest mistake is going, I'm the storyteller. Without me, there is no game. Sometimes with you, there is no game. So it's important to realize that we're all here enjoying the same hobby, right? We're not here because, like, I'm better than Bob the player. I'm the storyteller. The game is me. Like, no, but sometimes you suck, and that's why you have no game.
that's exactly what that means. I mean, the aspect of getting into what you said there, Mike, about the responsibilities of a storyteller. Yeah, sure. The upkeep, the world, the plot, all that is very involved. And to that, storytelling is a thankless task. You know what I mean by thankless? Of course, players are appreciative of it, but you're really not going to see any reward if you yourself don't feel value in what you're doing. Like, if you're the storyteller and you like it, then that's why you do it. You're passionate,
right?
And thus it's fun. From the player's side of things, your job is important, because if you can't hold the torch to be a focus or a mover and shaker in the game, or just following your own fun in your own way for the concept you made, you give the storyteller little and demand much.
Right.
And there is a sinkhole then, because at that point, you're not really playing, you're just watching.
Right.
And right. me and Nate have been in LARPs where this occurs. You know, you'll see dynamic players come in, and it's a core group of people that seem to always be doing something, always got stuff going on, and they'll draw a crowd. But the storyteller's sitting there pulling their hair out because there's people in that crowd that are supposed to be doing stuff either to oppose that group or stuff just equally important. And that's not a breakdown for the storyteller. I call that a call for the storyteller to step up his game.
Right.
It's now important for you to go grab those people who don't know how to approach that group and give them ways they can go about it, all to the point of fun.
Right, right, now, absolutely.
And in a LARP sense, not everybody is going to be as good as another person in stepping out of their shell and portraying a role. And so the storyteller definitely has to be there to help those people who should be important feel they're important to have the confidence to move forward.
Right. I think that one of the things that you'll find trying to run a LARP game, there is a very distinct difference in how you go about storytelling the LARP as opposed to the tabletop game. But I think, and feel free to disagree with me, Bob, but I feel like storytelling a LARP requires all of the expertise and knowledge that you had sitting down at the table with your friends, but it also requires you to basically take a step back, right? And what I mean by that, so, you know, Bob was talking about, you know, the storyteller player requirements, and sometimes you as a storyteller, I feel like in the traditional LARP, the storyteller is a lot more like a director or a producer, right? Like someone who's basically sitting there watching.
Oh, I agree 100%.
And when it's time for him to step in and go, hey, this is your motivation, this is why you do this, that's more what the storyteller is going to be doing during, like, in-game time, right? Every once in a while, Bob's going to have to play a character. Every once in a while, Bob's going to have to stop everybody and tell them what they're seeing, what they're experiencing, what's going on. But for the most part, it's a lot of watching, listening, and sort of assessing how this all makes sense in his world.
A storyteller is a facilitator.
Right.
It's that simple.
Right.
And, you know, you're there not to stop anything. You're there to help it keep going.
Right.
To a dramatic effect, to whatever entertaining, whatever fantasy element that is for the night,
right,
of direction it's supposed to go, and do it every week or every month or whenever you have your game.
Right. Now, I think that personally, the art of storytelling for a LARP is definitely a lot more uniquely involved, or can be a lot more uniquely involved than just like your standard tabletop game. However, it really depends on your game, right? There isn't any like hard and fast, this is harder than this, or this is easier than this. It just depends on your style as a storyteller. From my perspective, what I've seen, especially in games that run every week or every other week, you're going to have to come up with some key events that have occurred from week to week to present to your players, but you're probably going to be doing a lot less talking as a storyteller than if you did it in a tabletop setting. Right.
Right.
Your players are going to be interpreting things and role playing amongst each other. Whereas you in a tabletop game, you have to play every single NPC. You have to, you know, you have to play every single person on the street that they're going to encounter. In a LARP, you don't have that same responsibility necessarily, because you've got other players that are taking up the mantle for those NPCs you would be playing otherwise. So It's definitely, it's not a like for like trade-off. It's not a distinctly similar situation for a storyteller. So,
right. I mean, that's just how it is. And I wanted to add something you triggered when you mentioned, yeah, it. You were saying that the hardest thing for a storyteller, there is, and I would say this much, boundaries.
Right.
The hardest thing for a storyteller is going to be out of game. And it's going to be dealing with people who, these are human beings. And human beings have a diverse range of emotions that will be triggered sometimes.
Right.
Or rub the wrong way, or rub the right way, perhaps inappropriately rub the right way, where they will present it to you. And the hardest thing for a storyteller to do is to be neutral.
Right.
Your job is to not take sides. Your job is to not say one way or the other. Your job is to ensure the rules that keep everybody safe,
right,
and keep everybody happy. That is what's important.
Right.
And the moment you cross that boundary and start taking favoritism.
Right.
Or, like, I've heard a gamut of things. I'll name the worst one I ever heard of.
Yeah, I was going to say, maybe we could wrap this around a, like, here's what not to do for LARPs.
Right. What not to do, number one, as a storyteller, don't hand out XP for money.
Oh, yeah. That's
the first thing I'm going to go over.
That's like the death knell of your game. When you start handing out XP for money, longer are people going to be taking your game seriously.
Not only not seriously, the players who are there are going to now look to others who have, not everybody has disposable income at the moment,
right,
to do what they want with.
Right.
You know, most people don't, you know, so when you're playing a game, it's for them to get rid of that element, right? Right. They don't want to have to be exposed to that level of just nepotism or what have you, favoritism, elitism, whatever you want to call it. It poisons your game out again.
Right.
So don't ever do that. I am not saying don't take money for hosting game. Right. If you need it for the site, if you need it for, you know, whatever overhead you have or whatever the situation is, that's something everybody agrees with.
Right.
It's different when every player has a certain amount and they pay for the game.
Right.
And that's just what they got to do for whatever reason. Because we've been in LARPs. I'll tell you right now, the best LARPs we've ever been in were LARPs we paid for. And we didn't know what the money went to.
Right.
We speculated, hours of speculation, nobody ever knew. And I didn't even care if it went to the guy's library.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I would say like the first dozen LARPs I ever played in, you had to pay to play. Whether it was $1 or $2 or $5. But typically when someone's taking your money for something, they're going to put a lot more work and effort into it because they realize like, you know, this is whatever it is, if it's a source of income or not, you know, we're not saying charge for your LARP. We're not saying don't. Like, that's not up to us.
We're saying do not take money for XP.
Right.
For an effect in game. Don't anybody buy a high-powered character. Let anybody start out, hey, here's 500, I build what I want. Of course the storyteller is going to say yes.
Right. Cautionary tale, you know, when you walk into a game and someone's playing like a, I don't know, like a fifth-generation true Bruja with like 8 levels of whatever the fuck, and you're like, wait, how long have you been playing this character? And they're like, like 3 weeks. Right. You're gonna be like, wow, okay, why do I have 753 Bruja Ante with 2 levels of celerity? I don't understand like what happened.
And I'm gonna stress this. If you say, hey, XP for baked goods, that's funny to say. But if you're gonna do that, don't let anybody know that's going on.
Right.
You know what I mean? If someone brings cookies for the whole LARP and because they brought cookies and you get a special dozen that are handed to you, you don't turn around and give them 8 XP for it.
Right.
Right. That's their generosity. Generosity is nothing returned.
Well, let me ask you a question. If you encounter a situation like let's say you went to a game and that game was like, hey, you know, if you bring a friend, we give you a 5 XP reward. And if they stay for 3 weeks, that, you know, like we give you that 5 XP. Do you think that like for referral, do you think that that's something that you should or shouldn't do?
I personally don't think you should. I think if your game's good enough, mine was, you shouldn't have to hand out XP for people showing up that are new. That's not something you should have to do.
Right.
I was accused of that before.
Right.
Because the storytellers before me were doing that. I don't acknowledge that at all.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I came into that game on the referral program.
Right.
Yeah. I didn't come because somebody was going to give me XP. It's just I happened to come and somebody got XP for me.
Now, because that rule was established, I had told people, sure, you want to bring a friend here and you want XP for it, I'll give you your 1 XP for bringing your friend. Here's the joke. It's also the one XP they got for showing up that night.
Right? Well, because Bob's tricky like that.
I'll do it every time, because for whatever reason, you think it's special that you rounded up 9 people who are toxic and don't give a shit about game, and you brought them one night so they can poop all over the players and make fun of them, of the people who are dressed up having a good time, because that happened.
Yeah, no, right? Absolutely.
At several games. And then those people leave, but that guy got 12 XP or whatever the deal was. Nah, that's the exact reason you don't do it.
Right, right. And I think that that's the key here, is that you are trying to create something that is both fun and entertaining for you, because we're going to get to a whole, after this, we're going to talk about some of the pratfalls that you have to deal with being a storyteller. And it's not designed to scare you. It's designed to prepare you. Go ahead.
There was one more I wanted to get before we rolled forward onto it. It was the other thing, and I think it's the biggest thing, not only for legality reasons, not only for horrible thing it represents. I've been to games and left games immediately when I heard that there was sexual favor for XP.
Yeah, I mean, that's dark water, but yeah, it happens, definitely.
I mean, when it was said, I'm not talking like I went there and was like, shame on you, I made a stink of it. I mean, I went there and heard it and immediately disavowed any...
Well,
entanglement.
Yeah, absolutely.
With that at all.
I mean, we've been in situations where people have been asked to leave games that they ran because of, you know, behaviors that don't bear mentioning here. But then, you know, people were like, well, maybe we should bring this person back. And no, I mean, these are one of the pratfalls of running a LARP. The moment you get more than 5 people, the moment you start having all kinds of potential problems.
So when we're talking about the Zen mind you have to keep, the discipline to say, I'm a storyteller, I'm equal as a player. I believe in that philosophy. Because when you keep that mentality, you don't get corrupted.
Right.
Right? This is about power, and power corrupts absolutely. There's no joke. You gotta do it. I don't have power. I have friends, I have a troop, and I always ran with this mindset. I don't know why nobody ever took me up on it. And Adam, you might remember it, where I said, I'll run this month, but who takes over next month? And we'll just round robin.
Right.
We'll each take turns as a storyteller telling our story in the same city, same setting, same characters.
Right, and I think that that's... of course, nobody... Because I think that there is a level of intimidation to the concept of storytelling, because while a lot of players will stand and kind of be disrespectful towards those that are doing it, I think that at the heart and soul of the matter, they understand that if they were good enough, if they... had the dedication, if they could take that mantle on their shoulders and not be a jerk, they would do it, right?
Yeah, and for sure.
And there's a lot of people here who are like, hey, I run a game, I want to get better. We want you to be better, right? We want everyone to be good and to realize that there are some core elements that you need to keep in mind when you're running, especially a LARP, when you're in the potential to interact with so many people. You want to keep your head clear, because you're going to encounter every fucking bizarre situation you can think of. Stuff that you never even conceived of. You know, people trying to throw themselves in front of trains, or people causing themselves harm, or people cheating. And you're like, why would anybody cheat? Like, it's not a game of like, if I have the most points, I win. Doesn't matter at all.
That's going to be there. And what we're saying to that is that it sounds scary. Sounds scary that it's going to happen. Any hobby where you have groups of people in a social circle has those pratfalls.
Right.
They have them. There's someone who is the dynamic leader type people who are running the show or facilitating or hosting, and people just heap favors on them. It's a natural human thing to do it. I'm saying if you have that mantle of storyteller, keep it neutral, keep it zen, and just you know, they give you simple rules. Keep to those rules.
Right.
Stay in the fun and you'll be fine.
Yeah. Luckily, I think that from the perspective of LARP, if you as a storyteller, you as a player, you as somebody interested in the hobby, if you're truly interested, you're going to read those books. And whether or not it's the New Mind's Eye Theater stuff, or it's the you know, half dozen plus, you know, dozen books that came out before in New Mind's Eye Theater, they wrote material that I think was very good. And honestly, it certainly helped me to be a better storyteller. And I think, as we've said probably hundreds of times by now, our words are no excuse for reading, right? Our conversations are great to kind of give you a little bit of confidence, or maybe break down some of those barriers that you can't overcome when you read. But really, reading and then just throwing yourself into the deep end, I think, is key. Well, and... while we're talking about this here, one of the things that came up in my mind was kind of like the question, well, you know, if there's all these different like problems and potential issues that you can encounter as a storyteller, why do it? Well, I think there's one real easy solution to that. You do it because the reward of running a game that is mostly fun and seeing people at the end of that game who had a great time, even if you didn't actually do anything as a storyteller, that's just as good, if not more so, than going to a good game and having a good time as a person, as a player, right? Like having 20 people go, I had a great time, and only having like one or two people go, oh, I had some issues with this, but realizing that like you orchestrated that, I think that that's a reward beyond any that, you know, that's like kind of doing drugs level reward.
Well, that is the reward, right? It's that you do get the accolades of your peers of a job well done. You know, better well said, better done. You know what I mean? It's you went and did what other people say they do, but you actually did it and they know who did it.
Right.
And they'll go and have hours upon days of conversation about what they did in the game you ran.
Right.
And that's the reward. You are immortalized. That's the point of a storyteller, is that your name will live on in infamy in many hobbyist minds of the fun that you portrayed. And once you're known as being a good storyteller and you have a good game and you got more than a few people, it's not even the fact that it bumps the ego as much as it is you can give good.
Right.
Does that make sense? That feeling you can give out of someone, feel, I had a fantasy, it was safe, I played this fictional character, I got to do all this crazy shit that I love and enjoy, and this guy made it possible, or this woman made this possible.
Well, think about it like this. How many times have you been in this situation as a LARPer? You sit down with someone and they're like, dude, let me tell you about this stuff that I did, blah, 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 with my character. You're rarely ever going to hear them go, let me tell you about this time I was in some such and such as game, right? They're giving you accolades because they did something in your world, but they're hardly, you're rarely, if ever, going to get those accolades of like, I was in Bob's game and Bob fucking ran this scene. No, because Bob was no longer a part of it. Bob was just a verbal representation. Bob was explaining a world, and you were so deeply entrenched in that world that Bob was no longer a factor. Bob was just the narrator telling you the world as it unfolded, right? He could be anybody, but the truth of the matter is the fun you had with your LARP character was because of the storyteller in the goddamn world. That's just the facts.
And it's the writer's eye.
Right.
That's what that is.
Right.
It's the same thing that, Robert E. Howard had for Conan, or What's-His-Face had for Game of Thrones. You'll remember Game of Thrones, but I deliberately said What's-His-Face. Right? A lot of you are screaming it, and I did that on purpose.
Right.
And that's the point, because who's he? He's the writer.
Right.
Right? And that's his imagination you play in, but there's so much fan fiction written about Game of Thrones and ideas about what stuff is and where it could go that you'll lose time.
Right.
Like in your life, trying to look all that up.
Maybe this will piss some people off, but, you know, we do a book review every week about like White Wolf's material and Vampire the Masquerade. And every time I actually visually look for the authors, right? And I've had to do that because, you know, we post them, you want to know who wrote it. And with the revised edition, I started noticing in every single book, it says The World of Darkness or Vampire the Masquerade storytelling system created by Mark Reinhagen. And I was like, there must have been some legal precedent for that. And that depresses me because to me, like, I understand when you make a product, you want your name associated with it. But also it's like, if you're legally forcing your name to be on there, it's like, to me, it's like a desperate throw. Like, as a storyteller, I want my world to go beyond my capability. I want my world to grow to a point where I'm just, I'm a thought in that world, but eventually it becomes more than just you, right?
It has to.
Right.
It has to. If it's good,
right. It's
going to grow way beyond you. And other writers contribute to what you started.
Right.
So I agree with you. And I know there's people saying, well, should he not get credit for it?
No.
Who are in the hobby know who Mark Reinhagen is.
Right.
It doesn't have to be mentioned. You know where this came from.
Right. But I feel like there's and I'm just kind of talking out of my ass. I don't know if there was any legal requirement, but it's funny to me that it's in every book, you know, and when I see that, I'm like, there's probably a little bit more going on here than just like Stan Lee, you know, like, sorry, Mark Reinhagen, you're not Stan Lee, But like, people know who Stan Lee is, right? It doesn't matter now if his name is in every comic book or not. Everybody knows who Stan Lee is. But Stan Lee, the world has grown well beyond him. There's been hundreds of authors, literally hundreds of authors and hundreds of writers on 100 different...
And I want to note, to stick this in your head, neither me nor Nate or Utility Muffin Labs is saying F. Mark Ryan Hagen.
We're saying,
why did he have to be put in a book? You know where this came from.
Right, right.
And that's what it is. And so, but obviously, like you said, legalese, undoubtedly,
is the
reason to start happening.
The whole point is realize at a point as a storyteller, one, you're getting your material from somewhere else. Two, you're telling a story within that world. And three, your world should move beyond your expectations of actual control. That's once you no longer can hold on to those reins and you just are acting as a director, the world you've created has become its own thing. It's become alive. Your players are now swimming in that world.
I evolved from ST to Plot Monkey after my second year. We're literally in a LARP. I was no longer, that's what I was told. There'd be core people got there. Go ask the Plot Monkey about this, that, and the other thing. And they'll come get me, and I have to open up my little portfolio and go, yeah, that was this, this was here, here's your cards, here's your evidence.
Right.
And then they took off. I still don't know what happened in half my plots.
Right.
I handed them, and players went out, and they turned it into something else entirely.
Right. When you have people that are, you know, especially when you become a storyteller of a large, consistent game, you essentially are directing traffic. That's all you're doing. Right. Because oftentimes plots are happening. They're starting, they're coming to a climax, and they're finishing beyond your scope of even seeing. You're hearing about things happening in your game second and third hand, and you're having to adjust your world for that. These are not things that are going to happen day one. These might not even happen month one or, you know, the first half of a year or even maybe year one. But eventually this is going to happen. And that's something that you have to be prepared for as well. It's something unique to the LARPing concept. Eventually you go from storyteller to like storyteller in the traditional, I'm telling the story, to storyteller for a LARP where, all right, what happened to game tonight?
Right, for sure. But you got to do it smooth. Like, here's a storyteller out of the toolbox kit. I gave this to Nate night one. He came in the door, and I was going, you're probably waiting to get a whole stack of papers telling you everything that ever was and ever is about the people that are out that door.
What's the truth?
And I was like, it's great, Nate. Well, I don't have a stack of papers for you, but how about we go outside so you can have a smoke at the time? I'll finish off this Mountain Dew. And I'm going to look you dead in the eye and tell you one thing. Nobody cares. And he was like, what? And I was like, oh, I have plot. I'll show you the plots I had written for tonight. See them bullet points? See that bigger story I have? It's on every one of mine. Still have the big story. Right. I sure am waiting for players to, like, they'll get to point A. They'll start them. I don't know what happens to them. Because it turns into war, right? They'll have a plot, and they take off, and they turn it to their own whim, and they make it something else. Right. I was like, Nate, I love this shit. There's nothing I could do about it. Right. It doesn't matter what I do. And that's it. The only thing I can tell you, though, is how is that done? Why should you do it? Here is how it's done, and that's you got to look at the most important roles in your LARP. First, decide what sect you are playing, right? Mm-hmm. Whether it's Anarch, whether it's Camarilla, whether it's Sabbat. And I do mean Anarch in a separate sense. Yes, it's a subsect, but in the LARP out of game sense, it's ran different than the Camarillas ran as a whole. So, but we're going to stick with Camarilla for ease, and that's what we ran the most of.
Right.
And I will tell you, it would be no different in the other two sects. First and foremost, you got to establish who your A number one game players are going to be. Who is diehard?
Right.
Who is not have game will travel? Who is like, your stories are awesome. I want to play in your game. I know what I'm getting into. You know they're good and they're passionate.
What you're talking about are players you can hang your plot hats on.
Exactly.
That you can expect to be at that game every game session.
And here's the thing. You're going to get them together in a room. For us, we had about 30 people. Out of 100 that we could rely on for that, and out of those 30, who is best suited to play the prince? That's every time my concern. You do not want to be a staff member delegated as prince.
Right.
Because you will have no time to run, plot, or to facilitate scenes, or to help players stay in game and get along with what they want to do. You will then be forced to always be the center of attention. 50 or 60 people just staring at you, right, waiting for your every bated breath.
Right. You're never going to be able to accomplish anything. And I feel like there are people who might debate whether or not this is a good concept to follow, but I agree with you 100%. As a storyteller, you do not want to be a character that requires your constant, undivided attention. You don't want to be someone that has to be relied upon, because you might have to go and be involved in this little side scene, you know, where somebody's like got into a fist fight in front of the 7-Eleven.
Exactly. Exactly. New player is being mentored. New brew hop, new player being mentored by one of your experienced 30 for us. And in this scene outside, he's teaching them how to feed and are going through what they got to do. But now they need an NPC to represent that feeding. That's you, Jack. That's you, the storyteller who comes over to do that, or that narrator you have to go over and handle it. And we'll get into narrators in a second. But if you have them, me and Nate, 9 times out of 10 operate a narrator list because there's pitfalls there. But we'll stick to what we know here. In this scenario, you can't be the prince and call a time stop for the majority of your game, because you got to go run a scene that should only take 15 minutes, but that new player really likes Vampire. And so as you're getting descriptive and they're, because a true storyteller-player relationship should be a storyteller gives you a scene, that player gives you plot and motivation. You give them more plot, they give you more motivation, and you feed off each other to an end. And you've got to know when to stop, because that's another high. But that's what you're there for. So if that player is getting into the feeding and you get real tears and they're there on the ground and can't believe what they did, and your veteran player who was watching them is just into it and are keeping a lookout and are telling you it's going to be okay. And that dude, that if veteran player, you're used to him just beating the shit out of things. But suddenly you get real raw emotion, a paternal instinct to look after the new guy. You've done your fucking job.
Right.
You've done it amazingly. And you don't want to stop that. But you're going to feel like crap if you're the prince and everyone else has been time stopped.
Right. Meanwhile, for the last 3 hours. Right. Exactly. Meanwhile, your seneschal, your harpy, all these other people and the entire court are standing off to the side waiting for you to finish this feeding scene. Who's really benefited in this area? So as a storyteller, it is, if let's say here's a good example of where your prince would be someone that might be okay for you to play. The prince never shows up to court. Never.
Right.
He delegates everything through the seneschal. And at that point, make the seneschal character the prince, right? Give that player who has the knowledge, has the expertise, and has the will and desire, just give them the position of prince.
But let's tell this truth.
Right.
That is a way you can do it. What do we experience? Everybody wants to be the man.
Right.
It's that simple. Everybody
wants to overthrow the man.
And in every other game, I should state, that we've been a part of, it's always been to be the prince. So we'll stick to what you're most likely going to encounter. You may get to the point to where your storytelling is feared.
Right.
And nobody wants to be the prince. That's when you're doing it right, by the way. And I'm not saying it just to brag. There's a truth. Let me paint the picture. What does the prince do? The prince does not just go to a room, demand things of people, insult people, and punish people. That's just the barest surface of power. They're the ones you have to pull to the side and let know your influence has detected a breach here, has detected a breach there. You know of a Sabbat incursion that could be coming. There's an Anarch threat. There's a rogue elder looking to eat another elder or a player. You have Diabolus. You have Archons coming to see how you're running your city.
Right.
They got to deal with all that. That prince player should never be without knowing the full picture. And you need to stress them, because they are the most powerful. They're holding on to a domain where the Camarilla has empowered them to be the judge, jury, and executioner over all who are in their domain. So to do that, you got to be able to stand up, hold the reins, and wear the laurel. And when you're sitting there, the whole thing in your head is, these people I'm now in front of, I have to be able to use to help keep my domain in check. Right. And that's why they are acknowledged. I acknowledge them to be able to be here to do that.
Right.
Now, once you get to that point and you have that right player, you're fine. But not everybody's going to be there already. And for what Nate says, that's a truth. The bomb technique, and actually it was Nate who thought of it. What if you made the prince someone to be feared? There's somebody you should never want to be in front of. And I remember when we got this, we reviewed the book, but it's Marcus Vatel is always a prince he and I both think of.
Right.
And we showed this when it was Prince Loden, right? We were running a Chicago game.
Right.
When we played Loden one time, and that's all it took was once, No, everybody wanted to be there on Elysium to see what was going on. That was the biggest turnout we ever had for a game when they found out it was going to be a Prince court. But when that Prince was there, people were terrified. Because there was stuff that you're just pulling out of a hat. You broke the masquerade, please come forward. And then the deputies
It was like an Inquisition. It was like the Prince finally had his notebook full of all the things. Oh, these are all the subjects I came to talk to my city about.
Right, exactly. But when you do it that way, the effect was profound. It was like, oh, shit. All right, well, we want the Seneschal. Who should the Seneschal be? That, again, exactly what Nate said. The Seneschal should be the guy who knows, don't wake daddy.
Right.
That's the point. I'm all your friends. I'm here. I am the second most powerful position in the city. I am the prince when he is absent. And so we should hope there is never a problem that gets past me, the Seneschal.
Right.
That is very good for a mover and shaker player.
Right.
To do and maintain. Because all the players know they can go above his head by one step, but if they do that, that's a doomsday device.
Right.
That may or may not go their way, or they can deal with that Seneschal.
Right. And they know that if they want to be the Seneschal. I want that prince to notice me. Well, I better do it in a way that he doesn't open his ledger and then announce my name. Right. So it gives your players the ability to maneuver and manipulate within the confines of the hierarchy without them looking at the prince. Right. My opinion when I was playing the prince was, if I hold court, someone is getting staked, period. Right. Something bad is going to happen. Somebody's going to final death. Somebody's getting blood hunted. Something bad should happen because I don't want to lose my position. I don't want to lose my position as prince. And I went, this would be so much easier if this character wasn't a player character, because there's a thing that happens from player to storyteller. If you have a staff run, if you have a staff run prince, for whatever reason, the players are a lot less likely to try and go snatch that position from them. If you have a player run prince, players see it as a weakness. Players look for ways to usurp that position, not because they're going to be better at it, because they're not. They're not ever going to be better at it. It's like their perception of victory is that position.
And you can't stop it.
No.
You can't stop it. It doesn't matter any element. I never found a solution to this.
No.
Right? 20 years doing it, never saw a difference. Didn't matter if I was a player in a game and I saw it or anywhere I went. The storyteller will always grab the top player they have consistently come to their game, and the first ring they want them to grasp is a position of authority immediately. And a storyteller not as experienced definitely wants an experienced player to be that prince, to help them. Right. I can't tell you how many LARPs I've been asked to be prince. I've refused for them to give me sheriff as a consolation prize or harpy to pull me to the side. And really, all the storytelling I wanted was to pull me aside every game, tell me what plots are going on that night so I can help them carry.
Right, right, exactly.
In the room. You don't want to do that. God, you don't want to do that.
No.
Because they're here for your game, and I'm here to be a player.
Right.
Like, it's cool if I showed up and you're like, oh, man, Bob's coming. I know he's real experienced. I know Nate's real experienced.
Right.
I have an NPC prince. I don't know how often you're going to be here. Hey, you're going to be here a lot? It's like, yeah, would you mind playing the prince? That doesn't bother me. That's different. But what I don't want is that when I come to play the prince, I get a laundry list of plot you've been trying to set afloat.
Right.
That you could, because then at that point, I'm just a storyteller.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, suddenly you're on staff. And then the natural progression, not to derail too far, the natural progression is, you know, I was thinking, Bob, you're playing the prince and you're doing so well. Do you want to come up on staff as a narrator? Do you want to just, instead of you being a player, you just be a staff member? That'd be so much easier. No.
Not at all.
Right. No. Don't look for ways to pass off your hardships as a storyteller. Being a storyteller requires a fuck ton of work and a fuck ton of time. If you take
it's going to be stressful.
Right. Do it.
It's going to be stressful. But that's, again, we're about that thankless task, labor of love, if you will. When you're doing it, though, that stress should not come. You should be afraid to speak in front of crowds. It's natural. But that should be wearing down quickly,
right?
Being a storyteller. What if I portray an NPC without the right suit, or I don't have the right accent, or I don't have – that's a stress you could have. I think it's a silly one. I think most people think an item card in live action, you can get by. Because I did that for years.
Right.
You're on staff, and you're fine. I will tell you, the times I did dress up were some of the most memorable for the players, though.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I do know that.
Anything that you can do to make it special will definitely go a long way.
But you be in a park in the summertime in 102 degree heat with humidity, I don't like swass, folks. That's what it comes down to. I'm anti-swass. So, but back to heal. player princes, that's a plus. You can do it, and a con to doing it.
Right.
However you want to do it. If you're new to it, make the prince somebody who you play rarely.
Right.
To make sure that when you come in, it's done fairly.
Right.
If you're gonna put a PC prince, you know, is strong to the role. Again, have them have story stressors that are real stressors for the city.
Right.
Give them a city experience, a governance experience. You got to do that. At the same time, they will already have built who the Primogen Council is and isn't. And about the Primogen, if we got the prince and seneschal down, the seneschal is sort of the, not even sort of. He is the person that maintains all the problems that people believe the prince should hear. Right? And this is all the minutiae. I would like to get somebody acknowledged. I'm the seneschal. Of course you would.
Right.
But Harpy, who is this? And the Harpy should be right there and right. Say, oh, this is so-and-so of Clan Torador, and this is their child, and this is an, oh, and how long have you been here? This is the first we've talked. By the way, I've probably talked to this person every night I've been in-game.
Right.
But why am I playing it that way? Because it's not just about that moment. I'm at court. I'm showcasing to everyone that this is exactly how the prince is going to treat you.
Right.
They're going to put you on the spot. The prince doesn't know you.
Right.
Though they may have heard of your name, what do you bring to the city to warrant you having a child?
Yeah, of course.
Or to allow that child to come here. And that's a proper acknowledgement. You know, that's you trying to get hospitality in and all that, but that all is into effect to make sure that people see the prince's power and authority is respected, that you can hold yourself in a situation like that, and that you yourself are someone of worth.
Right.
Because this is where your wits pay dividends later on down the road. When you're right. In front. Let's say you're not witty, though. You're not a witty character. So everybody in the city gets to see that, too.
Yep.
And, you know, but they also get to hear what you're good at.
Right.
You know, this is how you get involved in plot as a player.
Of course. I think, too, it's important that from the expectation of, like, how your game is going to unfold from a political perspective, right? I've on a number of occasions, I've been to games where the Primogen Council was just like this revolving door of individuals. And at the time I was like, this is fucking stupid. But I have to admit, in retrospect, later in life, there's just like LARP and tabletop are not going to be the same. Right.
No.
And it's just because it's so much more difficult for you to maintain control as a storyteller. And sometimes you just have to roll with it, right? If the city comes down to what the players do and the players are having a blast and they're having fucking fun, and that means that there's a revolving door of Primogen Council, or, you know, every other week there's a new seneschal. So what? That's the game. Is it 100% right? No, but it's not 100% wrong either. Not ideal.
to back this up, in the game I ran, I took on, and this is all addressed the narratives because mm-hmm. I said I was, and
yeah.
I don't know how. I was hoping part two would get a lot done,
yeah.
Or we'd have a lot more time, so right. You got to curb me in that.
No, so we just talking. I don't care how long this goes.
Okay, so your narrators come in an important facet, right? If you're privileged enough to have narrators you can trust, I will repeat that. If you're privileged enough to have players you can trust to be narrators, awesome.
Right.
What are the qualifications of a narrator? They had to have read the book.
Yeah.
That's it.
They should be highly knowledgeable.
They just have to have read the book, or, and by knowledgeable, able to reference it.
Right.
You read the book and know it's in the book, and know they can use the book to open and answer a question. Right. I should be able to look at any narrator and go, would you mind running a feeding scene for Tom here on the left? He's been waiting for it. I didn't get to it at the beginning, but can you handle that? Yeah, absolutely. And the narrator goes and runs that scene. And if need be, comes back and hands you an item card of what occurred in that scene that was worthy because it impacted what occurred. Like if he went and did a polite feeding where there was no problems, licked the wound and walked away, no masquerade breach, but has a potential for a nomination for XP later, then he'll just do that at the end of game.
Right.
They'll tell you it was a great feed and that's it. But if that person went there and the police showed up and stuff got ripped apart, those are the notes the narrators need to take. And then
right.
They come back and hand you the item card because that will go into the downtimes for the week. Right? The narrative should be there to assist and help you facilitate the game. They are not there just to play a cool NPC.
Okay. What? I don't get a cool fucking freebie card? Come on. What is up with that?
And that's what sucks. I mean, like we played where I was both a narrator and storyteller, obviously, and I was even a narrator with Nate in a game before where we looked around and it's like 11 guys. It was like a game of 50.
Right.
And there was 11 of us that were chosen to be narrators, and it was looking around the room, You know, he had one guy who was just in a guy's house playing a video game at the time. It was like, I think EverQuest, whatever it was he was playing, supposed to be a staff meeting. Just, you know, just doing nothing.
Right.
And we're, you know, me and Nate showed up. We had plots we wanted to run. We had permissions we needed. We had players who we saw that generated ideas for us to want to run for them. We knew the Bruja wanted to fight someone. We knew the Ventru wanted to get at some political ramification. No, they were trying to steal some item at the time from a Setite who claimed it was in the city. And a Setite made it up.
Right.
You know what I mean? And those were all player-driven started plots that we wanted to turn into something because it should be turned into something because that's effort they're putting in.
Right. And it's entertaining.
Right. And when the storyteller, the head of ST as he was called, sat there, it was a lot of, interesting, took no notes, really didn't do anything with it, and then turned around and said, you know, Bob, I want you to play this sheriff. Have you thought about that? I know you had your character you put to the side, but on staff, my narrators have key NPCs they play. By the way, that's okay.
Right.
Have a key NPC, but my goal as a storyteller is if you're now a narrator for me, your key NPC is the player you had.
Right, right. And very well could be. I mean, I don't think that there's a right or wrong answer in that, but I agree with you, right? Like, from my perspective, I'm making you a narrator, which means you are a player who has additional authority so that the game runs smoothly, right?
Perfect set.
You can be the moderator of combat. You can be, because a lot of times, especially in bigger games, you start to have new people that don't know. And unfortunately, a side effect of that is you have people who do and they take advantage. Anyways, that being said, you might run combat. You might help to, you know, authoritate that, running a feeding scene. Or, you know, if somebody's like, hey, I have a question about this rule, you as a narrator, you're there to make a call, right? Because as a storyteller, if I'm running a plot related scene, I don't want to have people line up behind me for 4 hours to answer a simple question. The narrator.
Right. And that's everything Nate said. We'll reinforce it by simply stating a narrator is there to assist the ST.
Right.
There should be no assistant ST.
Right.
They're just narrators, right? That's right. It. Now, if there's an NPC that has to be ran, that because multiple scenes would be going on, assign it for the night.
Right.
And that's okay. Pick an narrator, and that's all right. But you should never have it to where people feel that you can't attack a narrator's character or get involved with that because they have a player too and they started there. And if they started some plot and became a narrator to dodge it, I've seen it. Yeah. Right. It's like, what?
Right.
Like, why do you get to do that? Well, cause I'm narrator. What I say goes, that's not true. Right. That's not the agreement. You're there to serve a function. What is that function? Please honor that function.
Right.
And it's there to assist players and a storyteller facilitate game.
Right.
And that's it. Now me and Nate just drop narrators, period. Because right. Narrators had such a level of abuse that I couldn't keep track of it.
Right.
I couldn't just stop. Like, the narrators I had were taking, I think my favorite was, they waited till they were off-site during the week, told the players, because I did narrators by clan.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I needed, because everybody likes clan meetings. It's just a fact. And when you have a clan meeting, clans get together and talk about clan stuff.
Right.
And that's just what happens in a LARP. And it's usually like the first 20 minutes to an hour of game. And, okay, cool. I can't be at 7 different meetings at once, plus plot, plus hierarchy. So, cool. Narrator for every clan. Well, what happened is, this narrator in particular decided he's a mock narrator. He's going to go and run a scene for the Nosferatu, right? They live in the same town. There's 5 players, and they all are like, okay, we'll go and have lunch, and we'll do this mystery scene. And he killed 3 of them. Killed 3 players. And I was like, interesting. Comes back and tells me, like, it was the greatest thing since sliced bread, and I have to now go and have interviews. Because whenever... In LARP, in any game, if you're going to have a player death, I want to talk to that player.
Right.
I don't want to talk to them because they're in trouble. I want to talk to them to see what they thought about what they went through, what occurred, what happened. Because you'll find in LARP, players are driven to frustration when they die. Usually it's just like, whatever. I'm fine.
Because you're truly, more so than in tabletop, you're truly sort of like making an avatar of yourself, right? You, the player, are playing all of the roles. You are acting everything out, and it's you're getting much more of you, the player, in the character than in tabletop, right? Tabletop, there's a certain level of disassociative behavior that naturally occurs because you have a piece of paper and you're rolling dice. So it's
right.
Like the narration aspect of the of playing is different. Whereas in live action, I am walking over to you and I am pantomiming punching you in the face, right? It's not me. It's my character, but it's kind of still me, right?
Right.
Right. So yeah, you're going to get people who are way more frustrated in LARP when a character is dead than you are in tabletop, for sure.
And whenever there's a player death, to me, and please take this as like cardinal truth, you, the storyteller, make time that night. Not a week from now, not hours from now. Give the player the chance to tell you they need more time before they want to talk about it. That's fine.
Right.
But if that night they're dead, walk up to them. Hey, how are you feeling about that? Let me get your read on what occurred. Do you agree with what happened? Do you have any thoughts on what happened? Now, why you're doing this is because you want them to keep playing the game, right? And you also want to make sure that your gamers ran well to where they don't feel cheated, they don't feel slighted, that their death meant something, that there was a point to all right. that effort being suddenly removed
right?
because they're no longer there. You got to have that. Now, that being said, I was uncomfortable that it happened off-site. I was not warned it could be a potential. It didn't even need to be ran. And so that was the key moment. I was like, I don't have narrators anymore. I do not want that done. Because the players involved were cheated. It was an unimproved NPC. It was a whole bunch of nonsense and drama that went into it. And, you know, they were all as players again. And once I announced that, people knew why. It was a given. And then, but what embarrassed me, not only did they know why, the whole troop, like 80 people, were like, oh, thank God. Like, nobody would tell me, the storyteller, these narrators were a bad idea.
Right.
You know, they were just like, oh, man, dude, every NPC was super, okay, cool. Now yeah. I understand.
And you have to get really good at that, too. That's a skill that you'll develop over time, but you have to get good at reading because, and when I say reading, I mean like reading people and reading people's moods, because most of the time people won't come up and tell you. Like, it's the rare exception that someone will walk up to you and tell you, like, hey, this is wrong. I feel wronged by it. What the fuck? You know, most people, they just right. don't, you know, they're non-confrontational, or they don't know how how you're going to respond, or they just don't care enough to get into it, whatever. And that's a large part of storytelling, too, is being able to listen to what people say, but also listen to what they don't.
So when you, so knowing that, you know, if you choose to have narrators and you trust them, great, they're there to use them. And I hope it works out better for you than it did for me. But note that the time required, right? To have narrators means meetings, and you have meetings usually an hour before game, 2 hours before game, to go over what you're going to do so everyone's on the same page, take notes in, and you'll have a fully functional game.
Right.
Now, the narrators I had lasted for over a year, so at least handled for a year.
Right.
It's just that, you know, it came to its natural conclusion. And a bad apple can spoil any good crop, right? Doesn't matter how good the other apples are, you remember the bad one. But going back to the hierarchy, right? Once you have a strong prince, you have a strong seneschal, and you have somebody who wants to be harpy. Let me underline that, wants to be harpy. Let's understand what the harpy does. You'll read that in a LARP book and all their functionality. I'm not going to go through the rules of it, but your harpy should be someone that is socializing. That should be rule number one.
Right.
Socializing with as many in the hierarchy and as many as not in the hierarchy as possible. They're supposed to get around. Now, if they nominate a lesser harpy, which they can do, fantastic, or a talent as it's called, cool. Now, why do that? Because the game is about socializing in a neutral environment, about growing events, and people should be cheeky and hidden and subtle about what they're trying to do and get over or create that's serving their own plot function. And prestation. Boons make the Camarilla.
Right.
That is the point. And the boon system needs to be honored, and it needs to be, I would say, not only honored, monitored, is the whole point of that. And then what happens? If your harpy is on point, you will know because of the weird rumors that'll be coming to you.
Right.
Right? As a player, what have you. As a storyteller, you should be laughing and smiling because most of the rumors, hopefully you've filtered through the Nosferatu pretty good.
Right.
Already by now. And I highly recommend that. If you have Nosferatu, have a rumor mill, use the rumor mill, let the Nos do what Nos do with that.
Right. Right. Absolutely.
Let it go. Watch Absolutely. It go. You may say, why not Malx? Personal choice, really. You could have Malkavians have some wacky wild rumor, but Malkavians at some point adopted the personality of the plot hammer. That's a common theme. Usually a Malkavian will be saddled with divisions given by the gods to know where the plot goes.
Right.
And that's there. To me, sort of a trope at this point, but there's nothing wrong with the Malkavian getting rumor mill. In fact, they have their Madness Network. That's something, it's really no different than what the sewer dwellers do. And you could do both, you know, do one, whatever you want to do.
Right.
But the point is, if you have all those elements in place, you have the hierarchy in place, you have the right primogen, and just because Nate played a primogen a long, long time, I'm curious, what is your take on a good primogen and a bad primogen?
Well, I think that the concept of a good primogen and a bad primogen would be, I think that it's clearly defined by how the position of primogen is perceived by the players playing in your game. What the fuck does that even mean? Okay, I'll explain. To me, a good primogen is someone who is self-satisfying, who placates those that are his underlings, who is truly embroiled in the politics of the Primogen Council, and who doesn't really give half a shit about his clan. But all of those clanmates think he gives a shit. Now, I'm going to articulate this a little further. The common misconception in a LARP or even in Vampire the Masquerade is that I have a primogen, and that primogen somehow like politically represents me within the city. Like they're my delegate, right? Like I elect the primogen. That's a good perception to have when you're a neonate or a young ancilla, right? Because that primogen doesn't represent you. They represent right. Their own interests. Their job is to buffer the prince or to advise the prince, or in some cities to puppet the prince, right? It's not in any way a political representation of your clan. It's just not. But I fully believe and support that you should make those beneath you feel as if you are, right? It doesn't hurt if your clan supports you with their fists and their voices. You're irreplaceable. So to me, go ahead.
And to that point, you're going to read in the book where it tells that the primogen represents the clan. That's what they tell. That's what's told to everybody.
Right.
Right. That you are nominated to be the primogen of your clan. Well, all right.
Yeah. It depends.
Sounds great.
Yeah.
If you're doing the job Nate's talking, they should nominate you.
Right.
Right. Because they believe you're there to represent right. them.
But the point is they shouldn't be able to get rid of you if they wanted to. You as a primogen. And again, it's going to be a little bit different in a LARP because rarely are you going to have elders in your city that are represented. We've tried some dynamic things where we actually had like NPC elders, but I feel like it does take away the player's perception that this might be an attainable goal for them. And that's the major thing in a LARP. The reason why a lot of people continue to enjoy it and continue to come back is because they see these positions as like attainable goals, right? They're like, I want to be primogen of my clan. I want to be bishop of my city. I want to be this. I want to be that. That's fine. That's what you have to come to terms with as a storyteller in a LARP, and what you have to come to terms with as a player, that you get a position, you need to really get a grip on that and make it ironclad, because for good or for bad, other players are going to be gunning for it. You know,
right.
It's not the representation that you would see in a clan novel or in a tabletop game where that primogen, you know, Tyler, the Bruja primogen, is unassailable by the clan. Put her in a LARP. Guess what? Someone's going to throw chops.
Someone, first one.
Right. Someone's going to try taking a swing at the king. That's just the way it is. There's no way around it. There's no way to avoid it. So you might as well embrace it. But also for you as a player, that means you better be ready for the challenge and keep your game. You know, if you go, I'm only going to come to game every third game, someone's going to come every game and someone's going to be preparing to take your position because of the status it brings. So,
and that's something that's incredibly insightful. Consistency.
Mm-hmm.
If there is a LARP game and you've committed to the LARP game, let the ST know what you're committing to.
Right.
So that you don't stagnate plots, so that you're not relied upon one
right.
evening.
Yeah.
You know, keep in communication.
Yeah. It comes back to that thing that we were talking about earlier about hanging plot on players. You don't have a choice. As a storyteller, there are going to be players in a position of power or a position of authority or a position of influence where they're going to get to know things and they're going to get to do things, and you have to hang plot on them, but you have to know before you start doing that what those players are willing to commit to. Because if you have a player that's really good, but can't commit to more than, you know, one in every four games, they're not good enough. I don't mean good like they're bad players. They're just not consistent enough to hang plot on. They're not consistent enough to give information, because you're going to give it to them and it's going to stagnate because they're not there to, you know, propagate that plot, to plant those seeds out in the game. You know, player prints, same thing.
And that's the ultimate, right? Because what's going to happen is that person who shows up now and again, I'll be honest with you, I've seen players just lie to my face. Hey, yeah, I don't feel like coming, you know, da 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 da, because, you know, work, blah blah blah, responsibility, blah blah blah. And then I'll see that same player there more often than they said they would be.
Right.
It's that they what it is 9 times out of 10 they want to gauge your ST.
Right.
They want to gauge your ability and what this game could turn into before they fully commit. That's okay. It's going to happen. Just stay the course. Don't be afraid or insulted or anything. Just do what it is.
Right.
All I'm saying is be courteous. And if you're agreeing to show up every Saturday at X amount of time, that people can know that that's going on and can tell you, well, I'm going to be here every other week.
I feel like if you've ever watched the show The Office, you're going to find that in LARP, there are a lot of people that fit personality types that you can find very clearly in The Office. And the character, or the player rather, that Bob is talking about right now is the Ryan character. And the Ryan character is the type of guy who's like, yeah, maybe I'll show up. And you're like, okay, well, I need to know if you're going to show up or not. And they're like, yeah, I'll be there, maybe. And you're like, I need you to be reliable. And they're like, I don't like to, you know, I don't like to commit to things. I don't like to commit to not committing. Like, they're very aloof. And you have to understand there is going to be people like that. There's going to be people, you know, you're going to have your Dwight Schrutes who are crazy and they bring a machete to game. And you're like, you can't bring a machete to game. And they're like, I didn't know that. Like, I thought I just carry this machete everywhere. And you're like, no, we're in a public park. Put the machete in your car. And they're like, look, if you need anything, Bob, I've got your back. And you're like, yeah, I bet you do. Put the machete in the car. Okay, thanks. You know, you're going to have these people. And that's the thing that you have to come to terms with. You basically, it's like managing a store. It's like managing a corporate store. You have to deal with personalities. You have to deal with angry customers. And at the end of the day, you're probably going to want to go home, stop at the bar first, and get shit-faced. But you get to see, right, do it. You're an adult. It's fine. But you get the joy of providing story and fun and entertainment to players.
Now, on the back end, the positives. Right. We've smattered them in here and just want to keep this held tight. Once you get your positioning and then you get your plot and you get your players, you're golden, really. You're really set for the LARP. You know, we've mentioned enough pitfalls that you should be able to tackle those with at least a little bit of confidence or at least expectation.
Right.
And then the other half is that once you get going and you know this knowledge that we didn't have before we started, what you're going to get is you're going to be prepared to really handle anything weird. Right. But most often, it's just going to be you learning how to negotiate with your players to have a proper story and a good time.
Right.
That's it.
And this isn't even going into like all the other the logistical stuff. Like that's stuff like any event planning. That's you're going to have to figure that out for yourself. But
and that's another ball of wax. Right. I mean, that's just
right.
That would be boring, is what we're trying to say. That would be boring. How to do an event plan? Sit down and plan it.
Right.
It's that simple.
Yeah. Where, go through it. Yeah. Yeah. Time, place, location, amount of people. Yeah. That's all whatever. But other than that, all of this kind of sounds really super complex. It's not. The fundamental truth of any game is decide you want to run it and run it. That's it.
If you build it, they will come.
Get yourself a book, whatever book you choose. Declare yourself a time and a place. And invite people. And whatever happens, happens. And you're going to run good games. You're going to run bad games. The first step is just going, it's time to run a game. That's it. Mystery over. Run the game. Run it to its course. Good, bad, use it as a learning experience. Run another game. And run another game. And run another game. And keep doing it. And people will come or they won't. And you've enjoyed the hobby that you have. That's it.
There you go.
Mystery solved. Anyways, yeah, it's hard, but it's fun. And that's the point. Everything that's worth doing is worth the challenge. So cool. I'm sure you guys are going to have a ton of questions. feel free, just like you did in the last one, leave us some questions. We'll be more than happy to address them in future podcasts.
I didn't mention sheriff or deputy. Right. We didn't get into that.
Right. Right.
Because those are usually, well, to us, the funnest positions ever.
Right.
Right. Sheriff is going to be your investigator.
Right.
Your deputies are going to be the ones who, well, your sheriff reports the hierarchy and deals with those high status members who have issues and problems. Also going to be the one leading interrogations.
Right.
Your deputies are going to be your hands that go with you to do the dirt.
Right.
Right. That's the point. And that should be handled too. And those positions are fun. Plenty of player will fit that. You will see the pitfalls and the fun parts of them naturally. Those are the easiest to represent on, right, on the higher gate itself.
Right. Right. Absolutely. And, you know, again, this all, you know, fits into the core concepts of like logistics and what kind of game you're going to run. Hey, you know, nothing but fun comes from these things. And, you know, yeah, of course the hardship does as well, but you know, all of the relationships that I've created, the people that I've met, the friendships that have been started, like this is something that at its core, if more people were doing it, you know, it would be a bigger hobby than it is. And I feel like it's definitely facing a resurgence, you know, and a couple weeks back, you know, I went to a LARP and there was a ton of people there and I got to meet cool people and I had a lot of fun. And were there things that annoyed me or aggravated me? Sure. But that's part of the joy, right? It's the good, it's the bad, it's all the things that come with it. So again, if you have questions, concerns, things that you want us to articulate on a little bit deeper, definitely let us know. We'll be more than happy to touch on them. But hopefully we've been able to impart some greater knowledge on the hobby of storytelling and running a LARP. And hopefully you've come away a little bit more eager to go and start your own game. You might start with 5, you might start with 25 and surprise yourself, who knows, but the important part is you took that first step and you actually did it. So
word.
Cool. Well, I guess that's it. Until next time, I am Nate.
And I'm Bob.
Thank you for listening to a very special edition of 25 Years of Vampire the Masquerade, a retrospective podcast. Please visit us at utilitymuffinlabs.com for more Utility Muffin Labs, consistently rated adequate.